Welcome everyone to the very latest Bolt from the Blue podcast, and we've got three things to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about Copenhagen, and we're going to talk about that other sort of game of some consequence to people of a red persuasion just outside Manchester, and also we're going to talk about the exciting upcoming game against Liverpool, and we'll find out something here. But to talk about all these things with me is, of course, your friend and mine, Bernard Dineen. Bernard, how are you?
I'm all right, mate. Yeah, I'm just, I'm not nervous yet. I wasn't nervous. It's funny, actually, I wasn't nervous before the derby, which I usually am. I was quite calm, and I'm just hoping this calmness means a good result coming up soon. But we'll talk about a couple of other games, won't we?
We will indeed, and we'll start off with the very latest one. Well, we sealed our passage into the last eight of the Champions League, and I didn't think it was going to be like this, Bernard. I thought it would be like a 0-0 or like a 1-0. It was more comfortable than that, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to throw a question back at you now. I mean, there were seven changes to the United team for this game against Copenhagen. I think I got nine right. I'll give you the squad, then I'll ask you the question. The 11 was Edison, Lewis, Akanji, Diaz, Gvardiol, Rodri, who I had rested for this one. Kovacic, I didn't have Bobbing because I thought Doku would start. We had a bit of a problem with his muscle anyway, didn't he? So I don't know whether he would have started anyway. Bob, Alvarez, Nunes and Haaland. Now, that's seven changes, mate. You think back to when we make seven changes. We struggle. We've struggled in games, haven't we? It doesn't matter who we've played, whether we played Southampton, a rubbishy Southampton on the South Coast or whatever. When we made more than five or six changes, we've struggled. So does that mean this team, when we make the changes, is just as good, if you like, or does it mean we've dropped a little bit of a level from the best team we had, say, last year, two or three years ago? We're still winning games with seven changes. What do you think? Have we dropped a level, or are we so good now with our squad depth that we can afford to make seven changes and still dominate a game?
I think obviously it's not as good. But if you look at that list that you just read out, that's pretty much everyone who has been struggling for game time over the last 5-6 weeks. I mean, you think of Gvardiol, you think of Oscar Bob, you think of Nunes. You could also even toss Kovacic in there as well, and certainly Rico Lewis. What I would say is that they're all going to be highly motivated. This season, we're into the final sort of stretch, and all the big prizes are coming up, and they want to be part of it. I'm saying they're extra motivated, but by and large, I would say, yeah, you would expect this team to struggle because we have quite a bit with our sort of second string. And we knew that Copenhagen are certainly on their own ground very good. We didn't know how they were going to perform in this one at Allianz.
It's not a young 11, is it, really? You know, I mean, obviously you've got Bob in there, but it's not particularly as though we're playing, you know what we're doing, that we're not playing the Liverpool way, or we're not playing kids at all. We're, you know, it's still a fairly experienced in age, if not, you know, regular starters.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I was very excited to see how this team were going to get on. And it's going to be difficult for us, Bernard. It's going to be difficult for us to talk about the second half because everything was done in the first half.
You're probably not the second half on the head, mate.
I know, you could have switched off at halftime. But anyway, how were you feeling going into this game?
Well, you have to be confident, mate, didn't you? I never used to worry about Champions League games anyway until we've actually won it now. And I'm probably a bit more interested because I want us to win it again at some stage. I'm not greedy, you know. But yeah, 3-1 up. I was just worried about the physicality. I thought they left the foot in a couple of times, I think, over there. I didn't even, if I remember right. They were a little bit, not want to say dirty, but, you know, they were a little bit physical, let's say. So I was glad in a way Pep did make seven changes because I thought obviously key players might take a bit of a kick in. So, but yeah, I mean, I was confident of an odd, I predicted a 3-2, so I was one out, but I was confident of us winning, and of course, winning well on aggregate as well.
Yeah, I thought Doku would play in this game as well, but apparently, as we know, he's got a kind of minor muscle issue. Whether he would have a chance to play against Liverpool anyway, I'm not sure, but we'll talk about that. Well, off we go. We weren't waiting long, and this time it's Akanji after 5 minutes, and I always like to see Akanji score because he desperately tries to every single time if he can get half a chance, and this time it was quite a nice looking one, you know. Quite dramatic. Well, as far as he's able.
I must admit, I had to look twice because it's the sort of goal I thought Haaland had scored. You know, I was there behind the goal. It was, of course, again, they obviously went back to kicking towards our end in the first half because obviously the Ivy didn't win the toss, so they're not bothered about things like that. But I had to double check because it was sort of a Haaland finish, wasn't it? Where it was just watching the replay, it was far better. I thought he just basically side footed it in while I was there, but obviously it was a little bit behind as well, wasn't it? I think so. It's just a cracking goal, and Akanji. I mean, you know, we'll say it now. I think he was my man of the match. I thought he had a cracking game. All right, you can only play what's in front of you, and Copenhagen aren't the greatest team in the world, but I thought Akanji loved it, and I think that goal after 4 minutes, as you said, he loves a goal. And of course, 1-0, what was that, 4-1 on aggregate, and you sort of start to think, well, this is going to be a long 86 minutes, isn't it?
Now, one of our songs, as you know, is We Never Score From a Corner. That was from a corner. And this is getting fantastic. Like, just a few minutes later, you score again from another corner. This time, it's your man in that blue mask. It's Mr. Grabara, because this was like Rodri hitting against the bar, and it came out to Alvarez, and he just, for all the world, it looked like perfect sort of shot for a goalkeeper to deal with. He could have even just headed it out. Went through him.
Yeah, it was poor, mate. I think he had that mask on to hide his embarrassment, didn't you? I think he was so embarrassed. I'm not going to say that I didn't have one or two of those in my time. I'm not gonna say that it didn't happen. And it's quite funny. I remember being on the Kippax with my lad. I think it's probably standing. It's that long ago. And they were kicking balls into the crowd, you know, the players, end of season or something like that. Anyway, and one come flying towards me. And my lad was only about 8 or 9. And it literally went straight through my hands. And he should have seen his face, you know, because he knew me as a keeper. He come to watch me games. I don't think he ever forgive me for doing that. I said, well, the ball was wet. I didn't have my gloves on, you know, so I did make an excuse. But there was no excuse for the poor, what's he called, the keeper? What's his
Grabara.
Name? Grabber. He didn't grab that one, did he? That's for sure.
But, Grabber.
Yeah, it was... Because Alvarez, it was a bit of a waste, really, wasn't it? It's just like, all right, you got hit the target, but, you know, 99 times out of 100, probably 999 times out of 1,000, the keeper's gonna stop that. He's either gonna tip it over, or he's gonna catch it. He's a European keeper, so you'd expect him to punch it clear, wouldn't you? Because that's what they tend to do, these European keepers. Anyway, they don't like catching it, but he just didn't do anything, did he? You know, on 2-0, 9 minutes, and it's definitely 5-1. You think, yeah, felt it's game over.
You know, we would kind of like expect that City would probably take their foot off the gas a little bit and hog the ball and just frustrate them. At times we did that, but I think it was like maybe just on the half-hour mark, we got a little wake-up call, didn't we, from El Yunusi, and the media were like salivating over this goal because it involved a smart little back heel.
Yeah, it was super. I mean, it was obviously up the other end, but even live from a distance, you could see that little back heel work. It was tremendous. I must admit, I thought, who the hell's not closing him down before he even got anywhere near the box, but of course... I don't think Edison could have done anything with it. It was just a cracking, well-worked goal. I think Diaz got a bit of stick, I think it was, for not closing him down enough. But I watched it back on replay, and I just thought it was a well-taken goal. Sometimes, you know, like the goal against Luton the other week, or even United, you have to take it, a goal like that. Just what a great move, and El Yunusi, just superb. Just Edison, absolutely no chance. And all right, we're not panicking at 2-1, are we? But give them a bit of an edge, didn't it? Give their fans something to carry on singing about, because it's one of these teams where they just sing and it doesn't relate to what's going on the pitch. But at least we didn't have a drum to put up with, so that was okay. But yeah, 2-1, and we're thinking, flipping it, we might have to score another one here just to make sure we have finished it off.
And we did manage to find one more before half time. It was into the stoppage time period. And just before this happened, I mean, Rodri had been, he's obviously been practicing his diags, those like long raking diagonal passes. And it was the second of these that set up Erling Haaland. And he tends to get his goal, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, again, some would criticise and say he didn't do too much on the night. But he had a couple of players around him. He just saw the advantage to shoot. I thought it took a deflection, but I think it just went through the defender's legs, didn't it? I don't think he actually took a deflection as such. But, of course, the keeper was literally going the wrong way or flat-footed. He was going towards his right. And, of course, Haaland pinged it from quite close in between the defender's legs. And 3-1, 6-2 on aggregate, and you're thinking, well, we might see a couple of the young kids he did have on the bench for the second half, because even the glass half empty like me, mate, I don't think we're losing from 6-2, are we?
At that particular stage, it was game over, but we were hoping that City would fill their boots a little bit. I mean, that meant it might have been a bit too gritty, but I mean, even on sort of like 10 minutes into the second half, the stat came up about 471 passes to Copenhagen's 198. I don't know about you, but I was kind of like licking my lips, thinking about what might happen. Nothing really did. Ederson stopped a possible second comeback goal from them.
66 minutes, wasn't he? Yeah, I think it was Mattsson. I think if he'd put it a foot either side of Ederson, he might have got a goal. But of course, Ederson sort of stuck a firm arm out and beat it away, sort of thing. So yeah, but. As you say, apart from Mr. Nunes hurting his finger, which didn't look very pleasant, did it, on TV? But you can join the other lads who've got these wrists back. You know, they all seem to have the fingers and wrists taped up, don't they? I think Foden's got his done. I think Diaz has got his done. So obviously, I think Nunes thought he was missing out, so he wanted a little bandage on his hand as well. But it didn't look very pretty, did it? I saw little sort of still pictures of it, but... Yeah, they were trying to pop it back in with him. I think they were trying to get it back in with it or something. Yeah, no messing about. They just took him off. And, of course, it gave a chance for young Hamilton, didn't it, to come on. And, of course, we saw old Jacob Wright as well, didn't we, a bit later on for his Champions League debut. So it gave the chance for a couple of the kids to come on. But it was a sort of second half. You could have just stood at the bar and sort of just stood at the bar.
Well, you know, that one thing that those were two of the substitutions.
Oh,
another
the bar,
one that we
Sorry,
did was
mate.
John Stones.
Talking about bars, we hit the bar, didn't we? Rico Lewis hit the bar right at the end.
He did, but I'm just thinking about this. Like John Stones comes on to replace Ruben Diaz. That was on 68 minutes. Any, what was the thinking behind that one? Because I thought it was just going to be a nice little stroll for Ruben.
Yeah,
I didn't think it was.
Obviously, we can talk about Ray. We're still our friend, and he was asking five questions, and one of the questions was, what the hell was he doing putting Stones on? You know, a guy who's obviously earmarked for Anfield. What are you risking? Why are you risking him? Which is basically what, you know, and it was odd. But then again, I think Stones, because he's not been playing much, he probably did need that little run out, you know, the few minutes just to keep him ticking over. Because I think we're going to have to play Stones quite sparingly. I think that's what Pep's aiming to do now, between certainly this season, and we know his injury problems in the past. So I think that's Stones' role now. And of course, when he came on, he was okay. But I mean, you've got players like Akanji. He's asking Akanji to play that sort of role that Stones made his own towards the end of last season. But you can't rely on Stones, so I don't blame Pep for trying other things as well. But I think from a point of view of getting a few minutes in the game, I think that was okay. I wasn't too worried that, because if Stones had come on and broke down or something had happened, I mean, he would have only done it at Anfield anyway. So I didn't disagree particularly with that.
All right, Bernard. Well, I think we talked about the substitutions. We talked about the issue with Matheus Nunes and his dislocated finger. We talked about one or two chances, but I don't think there's that much else to talk about apart from the fact, you know, we're sitting pretty 6-2 into the last eight, looking forward to, you know, seeing who our next opponent is going to be, and that's pretty much it. I can't think of too much. That's like kind of nodded off.
John, almost. I mean, look at the stats. We were quite close, but that's only because I think they sort of had all their chances or most of their chances. It was a bit of a hairy 10 or 15 minutes towards the end when we were blocking things and stuff wasn't being quite met by them. But as I say, it's 6-2. What did they have to lose? He may as well have a go. He flung a few new players on. Probably enjoyed themselves more than we did in the stands, you know, their team, the last few minutes. But job done. Of course, we've got bigger fish to fry now, haven't we, in the next couple of rounds, if we can get through the quarters and the semis.
Absolutely. We're sitting pretty in that competition. Let's get on to something which is probably, I would suggest to you, a little bit more interesting than this game, which was the game before, the derby. What were you thinking going into this one, Bernard? The only sort of little issue was Doku start this game, or who would sort of like that sort of debatable position that no one quite knows or no one has quite nailed down. Yeah, but Doku was chosen. How did you get on with this lineup?
Well, I got a full house all round, mate. I got 11 out of 11. So me and Pep are obviously on the same wavelength with this one. And I got 3-1 as my scoreline. So I got, a full house on this. It's interesting, though, isn't it? We talk about Doku, and I put Doku in because I thought what he'd do is stick him out wide. We'll get him taking on, you know, let's face it, United's defence isn't the greatest, is it? Left, you know, without Luke Shaw, it looks a bit ropey at the best of times, doesn't it? Let's be honest about it. And I just thought he'd tell Doku to stick to that wing, take a player on and try and get some crosses in. But Doku had a particularly poor game, I thought, in this one. Is he trying too hard? Was he so good when he first started that we're expecting too much from him, Mike? I'm a bit of the team that played, I think Doku was the least effective. Would you agree with that?
I would say yes. So every time, apart from the sort of like his opening bow, I mean, every time I've seen him since then, he looks like a kind of an unguided, unfocused missile. I mean, the speed is terrifying. And he's great in with one-to-ones, but it seems to run out of ideas after he's done all the hard work. But yeah, you're absolutely right on that score, I think. I'm just looking at their lineup, and look at the number of defensive players you've got in this team. Obviously, apart from the back four, they had Dalot, Varane, Evans and Lindelof. You've got Casemiro. You've got McTominay playing in an advanced role. I mean, who does he think he is? And that was a very, if I had been a Manchester United supporter, thank God for rescuing me from that situation. You know, with the whole George Best thing in our family, I mean, that could have so easily happened, but luckily I got away from that. But that was not a very inspiring looking team for, and if you look at their bench, Bernard, as well, Bayandir, Kamwala, Une, Amrabat, my goodness, Collier, Diallo, Forson, people that most people never heard of. It didn't look a pretty optic, I think. What would you say?
Awful. Absolutely awful. A bit embarrassing to go one goal down, but of course it was it could have so easily been two or three because, you know, we did something that hopefully this week we won't do against a certain team down the East Lancs. They could have definitely, I mean, if Rashford had been on form, he might have scored a couple of goals. He scored a cracker, of course he did. You can't do much with that. But you just look at that team and you could just tell. I mean, they switched ends, didn't they? They did the old switcheroo. So obviously we got the benefit, which I like, because they're shooting towards us for the second half, which is great. So they tried to disrupt us a little bit by doing that. And I like that. I don't mind that. I don't mind the captain of the opposing team doing that at all. I think it's a good idea. You know, and obviously that first half, you think, oh, it's working. You've got Onana, who takes an age over every goal kick. I mean, this is a cup game against a championship or a first division team where they're just trying to eke out every minute they can. And Onana, I mean, he went down with cramp at one time and got more time wasted. I mean, you know, you need a firm referee, but they don't exist in our league, unfortunately. Just from Onana to Rashford, I mean, say apart from that goal from Rashford, which let's be honest about, was an absolute stunner. Perhaps he was given a bit more room than he should have been, I don't know, but you're not going to stop that. And apart from that, he was absolutely useless. You know, he did one sort of wild air shot, didn't he, at some stage at the back post, which, you know, a half-decent player would have sort of controlled it and got at least a shot on target. And then, of course, was it the second half or the first half? Oh, it was the second half, wasn't it? Well, you know, he literally, if he feels anyone on him, he just falls over, tries to get a free kick. You know, if he feels someone touch his arm, you know, very Mo Salah-like, of course. We'll probably talk about him in a minute. But it was just awful. And I watched United against the first half because I had to be up for work. And there was nothing else on telly to watch. I didn't fancy watching a film or anything. I watched the first half against Forest in the Cup, and it is awful. And, you know, you watch that team and, you know, you're a bit devastated to be 1-0 down at half-time. But I was calm. I was calm before the game. I knew we'd turn it around. I knew we've got to beat this rabble. They're just one of the worst United teams I've seen, I think, come to our place for a long time.
Well, the statistics would tell anyone how much really against the run of play that was for what we saw in the first half. Yeah, I've got to admit, we've got to sort of, you know, give credit where it's due. It was a lovely little pass to him, and he didn't even have to break stride. Fantastic goal, but that's what you get from Rashford.
What was that one, Mike? Was it about 17 minutes? And they brought Fernandes, put Rashford through, and he sort of, Diaz had slipped, and then it left the ball behind. I mean, Walker didn't even have to tackle him on that one. He didn't have to touch his arm. He literally ran over the ball. This is the England's hope. I mean, I still see him in every England. When people put England teams out to win a competition, Rashford's a star, man. He was shocking. Absolutely. Apart from that goal, he was absolutely shocking.
He was, and I think he was kind of under pressure to perform because, if you remember, he'd given this long interview to the journos about his whole life. Up to this point, he was trying to address the criticisms that he's been getting for his inconsistency. And so that was borne out. You know, he's obviously got a bit of skill. He's got a goal in him. With all of these young players pressing for England spots now, the like of Foden and Bellingham and various others, if I was England manager, he wouldn't be sort of, you know, in my mind for any kind of England starting lineup. But you mentioned that as kind of like Bernardo Silva's shot blocked by Varane, and then they break and Rashford was clean through. I'm not going to say I would have scored that, but but you would expect Rashford to.
I'm sure we're going to talk about some other big lummox who should have scored one just before half time
can talk about that right now, but we've got long periods of City attacks. We come to Mr. Haaland. So tell us about this.
Well, I'll tell you, but I'll ask you what the hell was going on. Because, I mean, obviously, it's up the other end. It's up the other end to us. But even from 120 metres away, which is, you know, probably about 130, 140 metres away when I'm back in the stand, and obviously towards, not the back, about halfway up. I mean, you could just see that all he had to do was bend down and put his head on it. Does he have to always score something that looks fantastic? I mean, if he'd done a diving header, that would have looked just as good as him scoring with his foot in the air. You know what I mean? It wouldn't have made a difference. He would have looked superb if he'd put his head on that, because he could have put his head on it and fell into the net and done a slide, a knee slide into the net. I mean, he could have got his glory picture, and that's what it is. And I think people are saying that the only person who's seen miss one like that is probably Sterling, has missed similar things in the past. I have to admit, I was watching some footage of when Sergio was there, and even Sergio missed the odd sitter. You think, what the hell's going on here? But that was shot. It was 1-1 down just before half time. That's when you want your big glue, your big lummox, to pop those in. But Mike, any excuses for Haaland? It was just awful, wasn't it?
Well, apart from the fact that it was begging for a nice cushion header, yeah. I don't know, Bernd. I think that he prefers to use his feet. He favours the feet if he can do it, and he likes to, score one for the photographers. And sometimes he over elaborates and doesn't take the easy route. And that would have been, straightforward.
Was it the Community Shield game at Leicester? I went, against Liverpool that first game he ever competitive game, you can call Community Shield competitive, but he missed a sort of sitter in that one, didn't he, towards the end. But some kind of people are saying, but obviously you'll probably know this stat, it might have been a quiz question, I don't know, is it United have never lost a game after being winning at half time in 143 games? So of course, if he'd scored that, we wouldn't have been able to stop that record, would we? So kind of people are saying he was probably aware of this and thought, oh, we'll wait till the second half to score the goals because we want to ruin their 143 continuous game record of never losing after being in front at half time. So that's the kind of people, but we all know he was just a big lummox, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. And I can't believe that stat personally, given how crap they've been over the last 10 years. But that's nearly a 10-year-long record.
It's an amazing stat, mate, isn't it? I mean, I like stats, as you know. It's just a very amazing. It's like Stones not being booked at home and stuff like this. It's just an amazing record that they held. And as you say, they've not been the greatest team for the last few years. It's just hard to believe that no one's turned it around and beat them after losing to them at half time.
But I wasn't worried, just like you. I wasn't worried, particularly because the final 20 minutes of that first half was complete dominance. I mean, really, really embarrassing dominance from City. United were chasing shadows, and I just knew that we'd be able to come back. But what was fun for me was at halftime. I don't know, it's a compulsion. I go over to Mark Goldbridge's channel just to watch the videos. And of course, this guy is effing and blinding and celebrating like they've won the World Cup. And you just know, buddy, why do you do this? Because you know at the end of the game, people are just going to repost that, especially like me, for sure.
It might be something to do with 1.8 million subscribers, mate. It might be something to do with that.
Exactly. Really, really is the living embodiment of Alan Partridge. It was so much fun to watch him, especially when we equalize, go in front and then finish it off. And of course, he's claiming referees. He was claiming that Ederson should have got sent off. And there's a foul that the referee didn't spot in the build up to every goal scored against them. But anyway, the less said about that guy, the better. Into the second half we go. Bernard, I would imagine you were just as confident, especially the way we started the half. You were confident that it was only a matter of time.
Yeah, as I say, I didn't see any reason why we wouldn't turn it. You always think United might nick another one, and like they did about three or four seasons ago. Was it the COVID season where they beat us 2-0 or something stupid, where we battered them and they had two shots on target, scored two goals, but you just had a feel United are that bad that you're going to get back into it. And of course, it all started from a bad foul on Rashford, didn't it, mate? What do you think of that? It was a shocking foul. The referee should have blown up immediately for that foul on Rashford, I thought.
He should. I think a tackle from Walker.
Yeah, I think he had his arms around his neck and had his shirt off his back, didn't he?
He did indeed. And that's sort of, was sort of symptomatic, really, of what we were seeing from them, because they were, you talked about Onana, but my goodness, that was kind of like, you could imagine that it was Mourinho back in that dugout instead of Ten Hag, because they took the level of time wasting to new heights, I think, in that second half there, and every man behind the ball, and you knew this was, I mean, did Ten Hag seriously think he could like hold on to that 1-0 lead for the whole of the second half against us?
Well, he didn't enjoy his yellow card, did he, that he got after the goal anyway, for having a good whinge about, but it was nothing, mate, was it? I mean, what was it, just a hand on his shoulder? I mean, he didn't even grab his shirt, did he? He just put a sort of hand on him. And I mean, would some refs have given that, mate? What do you think? Would some refs have given it?
It's always a possibility, given the quality of them, given the quality of refs in the Premier League. But it was ridiculous. But then, 56th minute, cometh the hour, cometh the kid, and he's still a kid. It's Philip Foden.
We got a great view of this one, mate, behind the goal.
You did.
If there'd been no netting in, it would have probably carried on. I would have had a catch to. I would have had a chance to drop the ball again. It would have come straight into my arms, I think. But so I would have probably missed it again if there'd been no net in the thing. But oh yeah, it just arrowed. Nana's getting nowhere near that. And it was a good long while after that foul, wasn't it? It wasn't as though we went straight up the other end and scored. It was a good minute and a half, was it, from that incident to us scoring. So United have to do is actually defend and. Come with the hour, come with the man. I mean, Foden, another tremendous performance, and he kicked it off with a stunning goal.
Yeah, just the odd casual 20-yard pass from Rodri to set up that goal. So this is something that they can't do. You know, United, you're watching, you can't do a pass more than about 10 yards. Something that we specialise in, and I was impressed with that. That it was a beautiful pass, it was a beautiful goal, and he's on a deadly streak of form at the moment. What is it, something like 7 or 8 goals in the last 10 games? Foden, he's really coming into his own now, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's outstanding. I mean, he had the chance to put a marker down, didn't he, with KDB's injury. And I think he's done that. And he's become, Pep, you have to find, all right, you might have to play him in a slightly different position to what Phil probably wants to play when KDB's on the pitch, just to accommodate. but he's outstanding. And I mean, Pep did say the only thing that's he's going to be a problem for him is his attitude, or he hinted at it, didn't he? I don't know how long ago that interview was. I sort of read it today from someone that Pep had said that the only thing that's going to stop Phil Foden being, you know, absolutely up there with the best, which he's on his way now, isn't he? Let's be honest about it. Is perhaps a little bit of attitude. He has to realise what he's got and don't do anything silly with it. Perhaps he's put him under Walker's wing. I don't know, to keep an eye on him. So, you know, that'll inspire him to be a good boy, no doubt, under Walker's wing. But he's been tremendous. He's been tremendous all season. And, of course, we want him to be tremendous. You know, because KDB was all right. It was fine. But, you know, obviously, as far as man of the matches are concerned, Foden was even on a different level to KDB.
He was indeed. Did you see the flare being thrown onto the pitch?
I don't know who the hell threw. I mean, I know Bernardo came over remonstrating with the, I didn't know. I said, don't moan at me, mate. It wasn't me who threw it, you know, to the south stand. And you think about it. I remember that Villa game where we come back from 2-0 down and idiots were throwing blue flares on the pitch when we had the momentum of getting back in the game. So that just shows the total mentality of City fans. I do despair sometimes that we do have these odd lunatics, you know, because why? I mean, we just, you know, it's one, was it 1-1 at the time? It was definitely, yep. I mean, I just can't understand the logic for City fans saying, let's throw a flare onto the pitch. Fortunately, they didn't faff about. I remember that. I think that Villa game, it took them about 2 minutes to pick a flare up, deciding health and safety rules and all this sort of thing. But they didn't mess about with this one. They just got it in a bin, got it off. So it wasn't too bad. But I totally agree with Bernardo. I mean, what were you doing for? You know, if it had been a red flare, yeah, I would have totally understood it. But not a blue, you know, not from a City fan. Unbelievable, really.
So just shortly after that, that was 57th minute. A couple of minutes later, obviously the substitution where Doku comes off, Alvarez comes on. And
do you think Alvarez for the rest of the season? I know he's been in Pep's mind for the Premier League games a lot of the time. Started most of them, hasn't he? There's only a couple he's not. Do you think he's better as an impact player coming on as a substitute?
I think probably because I mean it's hard to. To argue against him based on stats because he's got he's into double figures for goals and assists. Alvarez, he always seems to manage to get through. He's very, very direct, always looking to shoot. And but just in order to include him, you're going to have to omit someone else that you shouldn't, like someone like Bernardo Silva or and just to fit in like Foden and KDB and Bernardo Silva, etc. I mean, it's hard sometimes to shoehorn him in, but he's been playing in pretty much most games this season, mate. So one thing that happened that was quite funny and illustrates perfectly what we were saying was this moment in the 65th minute. And even Gary Neville's commenting about this. So this is Onana again. So he basically this is a new sort of tactic, because time wasting, you know, taking a long time to take a goal kick, but like signaling to the bench that he's injured was a part of his new play. And even at that point, you had Gary Neville on commentary saying that was time wasting, and that they were really at it for certainly most of that second half. But we were absolutely relentless. I mean, it was literally
how long do you think you would have taken if that had been Edison doing that? It would have been booked on the first time he wasted any time.
Absolutely, absolutely. But the next one was always coming. It was just a question of when.
Edison made a good stop,
how.
Though, didn't it? I think Edison made a cracking stop. Garnacho, was it?
Yeah,
through 78 minutes. So he had a cracking chance, and of course he came out, and of course Ten Hag said he's fouled him. But you know, replays for me, he sort of got the ball. Might have got a bit of the man as well, but from our angle at the south stand, of course, it looked a bit dodgy. It didn't look as though he was close enough, but perspective is different. So I thought, oh God, what's he doing? Stay, you know, don't come out for that. But obviously he got there just before the guy. And yeah, I mean, it didn't look pretty, but of course VAR was happy and the ref was happy. So that's good enough for us.
And so here we come again, 80th minute. We take the lead and it's Phil Foden again. And this was really, really funny watching your man I mentioned earlier, Goldbridge, who was absolutely incandescent because he thought there was a foul in the build-up, which only he could see, really. Now, let's talk about this goal a little bit, Bernard, because this finally getting the reward for all of that possession and all of that forward movement. So I think this started off with KDB, a square yeah. one to Foden.
He's played it to Foden. And of course, our man we talked about making an impact, Alvarez, a nice little 1-2, wasn't it? But did you think Onana could have done a bit better with it? Foden, tight angle, played it across, which you're supposed to do in that sort of position with his left foot from the left-hand side. And it was a good shot, but do you think Onana might have done a little bit better?
A better keeper would have done better.
Hmm.
What do you think? You're the goalkeeping expert.
Don't get me wrong, we were grateful for it, but it was a cracking goal. But yeah, I thought Onana didn't play too badly when he was playing football rather than play acting. But yeah, I thought he got a hand on it. But I mean, Phil kept it low. It's difficult for a keeper. You know, most keepers probably save that sort of thing with the feet as well. They probably wouldn't try and save it with the hand. They'd probably stick the left foot out and try and block it that way. But course, that's not what Onana did. So, but hey, we were happy. Didn't matter, did it? It was happy for us anyway.
Well, what was exciting for a lot of us was, of course, that put Foden in line to have consecutive Derby hat tricks. It didn't happen, but it was good to like imagine that it might. We just continued keeping the ball. I thought we would see it out at that point. Were you expecting a late bit of icing on the cake, Bernard?
Not really. I mean, we had, what was it, 8 minutes went up on the board.
Yeah.
I thought, well, we're not Liverpool. We're not needing a goal in the line. You know, we're not needing to score. We're winning 2-1, ref, so just blow the whistle. But so United's time-wasting got them an extra 8 minutes in theory to go out and get an equaliser, but we were never in any problem, I don't think, mate. I don't think we had any real threats in that injury time or leading up to the injury time. I've not got anything written down here apart from that, of course, that's Garnacho thing we talked about before. So 8 minutes seemed a long time, but of course we didn't have long to wait for another goal, do we? Old Amrabat did his bit, didn't he? What a player he is, absolutely fantastic player. And of course it helped our big lummox save a little bit of face on the game, didn't it, as well? Because I don't even think Rodri had to do too much to dispossess him, did he? He just sort of seemed to just pass it to him virtually. And of course, a nice little pass from Rodri. And of course, Haaland, he's so good at that, opening himself up, put it into the far corner. But he sort of made up for that miss just before half time, of course. But yeah, it was nice to have a little bit of icing on the cake, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that put us back just a single point behind Liverpool, which is still the case now. And that is a nice segue into the final section of this little BFTB podlet. All right, Bernard, what's going to happen? It's City against Liverpool. It's on Sunday afternoon. And well, tell me your thoughts.
Well, the irony of it is, if Arsenal do their business the day before, they will actually be top of the table. So it'll be second versus third. It's not even a top of the table clash, is it? It could be just second place, third. And of course, as far as Arsenal are concerned, they'll be praying for a draw. It does them no good if we win. It does them no good if Liverpool win. They'll want a draw in this game. And you know me and stats, mate, and history. You know, and I can't get past the fact of our record at Anfield with good teams as well. I'm not talking with, you know, it's not like we used to go to Old Trafford and, you know, our side compared to theirs doesn't match up. We've been to Anfield and been absolutely awful with cracking teams. And even when Liverpool haven't been that good, even when they've not been competing at the top of the table. So I do take that into account. There's a psychological element. I think they're planning a Coachwell come out me again. I don't have, you know, this is just annoys me. The probably police have probably given the times of when this where the city coach will be, knowing the Merseyside police. So, you know, and obviously, I don't know. I just think psychologically that, you know, if you think the only time we've won in the last 20, obviously we won in 2003-2004, Kevin Keegan was in charge then. But the only time we've won is when there was no one in the ground, and, you know, and we stuffed them. And I thought, that's it. That's the monkey off our back now. We'll go on and do all right. But I think we've drawn one and lost one since, haven't we? So yep. We're not exactly began to dominate it. And they've had a few injury problems, but they're scoring goals. I mean, they won 5-1 against Sparta, didn't they, last night, as we're recording this. You know, like Arsenal. You know, Arsenal scored some great goals. They've got Salah back, who's usually a bit of a pain for us. We can't usually cope with him. And let's be honest about it, we dominated United, but they could still score 2 or 3 goals. So just imagine what an up-for-it Liverpool side can do. And it worries me to death. We're going to have to be very, very good, and we're going to have to be very, very tight defensively.
Yep.
And I just can't see that we're not going to let some chances through.
Oh, yeah, I would say that we'll possibly concede. But I'm not quite so sure that it's a mental thing they have over us. But certainly they rely desperately on their crowd to get them up for this in this kind of situation. Obviously, you mentioned Salah. They've not got Trent Alexander-Arnold. He's going to be missing for this game, but he has been in the in the media, Bernard, saying some things that just don't quite make any sense. I mean, in the time that Klopp and Guardiola have been there, we've won 14 trophies. They say 7. And one of the interesting remarks from Alexander-Arnold was, he said, yeah, I mean, City have probably won a little bit more than us. Probably. I mean, surely the journalist has got to say, probably it's 14-7, mate. What are you talking about? And he said, he's talking about, you know, what it would feel like to win the treble. Or they're talking about Liverpool for the quadruple this season. And a lovely little response from Ruben Diaz. And he was saying, well, you know, you need to do it before you can know what it feels like. Yeah. But a lot of nonsense coming out of that kid's mouth.
Yeah, they love it. I mean, they suck it up, don't they? I mean, the Liverpool fans suck it up. But he's not going to say anything disparaging against his team. But why does everything that has to be said have to bring City in? All right, they're playing City, but it's not just him. It's the media. It's other things. Anything that happens, we get City are dragged into it. Whether it's, you know, a few empty seats or the fact, you know, 115 we get thrown at us. And this... To me, I mean, you tell my lad when he was at school in the 80s, and he was just him and this other lad were City fans, all the rest were United fans. He had to go to school and suffer all the indignity. You tell my lad it means more to a Liverpool fan winning these things. I mean, it's absolute garbage. I mean, it means so much to us as City fans. And, you know, to say about the money, I mean, what a load of rubbish. I mean, Liverpool has spent, no, not far short of what we spent to win what they've won. It's just, you know, I don't know how the question was teed up. I don't know, but it's just a typical media-led thing that say this means more. And Klopp apparently defended his comment today. I actually saw a piece. I didn't want to, but ended up on the Liverpool Echo page. And you know, of course, Klopp was saying he's got a right to say. He didn't say, well, you know, he's entitled to say it, but he actually said, I agree with him. You know, and this is just, it's pathetic. I mean, I don't care if you look at Wrexham. I mean, it's not just City. Look at Wrexham. I mean, you're telling their fans it doesn't mean anything. The fact, you know, this guy's pumped money into to get you to where you're going. I mean, as a fan, it doesn't matter. And it never used to matter until 2010 or 11 when all these rules started coming. It didn't matter how much money you put into a club and how successful you were. And it's just another way of getting on at us, beating us up, you know, like Mrs. Jordan on Talk Raid, Talk Sport, whatever, Talk Crap, whatever it's called. You know, it's just another way to have a dig at City. It means more. No, it doesn't. It's someone invented that. I mean, didn't we have one? We'll see things you never see. Is that one of our things?
Yeah, that's one of us. That comes from the,
you know, it's the same Oasis sort of thing. I mean, Yeah, and then you see a picture of the child. It doesn't, but to me, yeah, well, we have, but it doesn't mean someone else won't do it. Some won't see it either. I mean, you know, it's just absolutely. What to say? Your fans and the club deserve it more. It means more. It doesn't mean more. Of course, it doesn't mean more. So, if you tell my lad, does it mean more? You tell me that, you know, I was there when we were good in the when we were the best team in England in the late 60s. We were better than United. They won the European Cup. We used to beat them all the time. It was no problem. And then to go through the doldrums of Main Road and shivering, drinking my pint on the kippats, watching some of the dross I watched, and then this to have this joy of last year of what happened, you know, it doesn't mean more to them than it means to me. And it's just fed by the media, and it's utter rubbish just to cause problems, and that's just to get a rise out of people. And it means just as much, every football fan of every club, whatever you do, whether you win just one cup in 50 years or like we have so many, of course it means more. The Gillingham playoff meant more to me than when United won their treble, and it meant more to the City fans. It was more important for us to do that. We didn't give a toss about United winning the treble. You know, we were singing, you can stick it up your at Wembley, you know, that's what we were saying. You can stick your treble up your, because that's how we felt. We weren't saying it to be bitter or jealous. That's it meant more to us. You know, that playoff victory meant more to us. So, you know, it's just what it is. But obviously, a lot of Liverpool fans have latched onto it. A lot of the mates now, a lot of Liverpool and United fans are sort of ganging up, you know, the usual ganging up on us and stuff like this. But
well, for any younger...
What about you, mate? It doesn't mean more to Liverpool fans. Anything they do doesn't mean more to them than what it means to you, surely.
That's true. And for any of our younger City fans listening, anytime you get into a conversation with a Liverpool fan, just ask them one simple question. How many league titles have you won in the last 30 years? And the answer is a resounding one. But it's set up.
They've won 20 overall, mate. Come on, be fair.
Yeah, but in the last 20, three decades,
I'm
I mean,
not too sure it might be 21. I don't know. I'm going to quote Vincent, it doesn't matter to me. It's not important.
I know, but I'm going to have to channel Vincent Kompany here when he met his father-in-law, and he was pointing at the shirt and saying, "What do you know what this means?" And Vinny said, "It means that you know your history, because it's been that long." But anyway, it's set up quite nicely because obviously Guardiola's record against Liverpool: lost, drawn, lost. So it's set up well, and they're unbeaten in 29 matches in all competitions at Anfield. But before I can let Bernard go, guys, I've got to get his predicted lineup for this game, and you're going to be able to hold him to account for it, because we've got it recorded, and also his predicted scoreline, which is going to be a lot more difficult. Okay, so tell us about who you think's going to start.
Yeah, just a couple of things that I've took into account on this. I can't see Pep risking Doku, because he can't hold on to the ball. I can't see him playing Doku. I can't see him plunging Bob into this. Grealish isn't fit. So we're going to obviously have a game where Foden and Bernardo are probably going to work the wings, aren't they, with Haaland. I think that's...
That makes sense.
Too much argument with that, mate. I don't even disagree.
No, that's exactly right.
I think he's going to do that. I think the defence picks itself. Akanji worries me because he had a cracking game against Copenhagen. I thought he played very, very well. But we all want Stones and Diaz, don't we? That middle two, I think. I don't think there's any doubt about that. He's not going to plunge Lewis into Anfield, is he? So he's going to go Walker. And of course, left back, the other one where my Pep's 11, I mean, of course, about a month ago, I would have said he'd play Gvardiol. But again, he's only just come back. But we all know defensively, Aki's a better player.
It's got to be Ruud Gullit. That Ruud Gullit lookalike.
Yeah. So Aki's got to be there. So the only other two positions are Rodri, which is obviously banged on. And then the other one is if Doku isn't playing, if he's not going to play Nunes, which I don't think he would have done whether he's got a dodgy finger or not. I don't think it would have come into it anyway. It's whether he plays Alvarez, of course, or whether he plays Kovacic. Now, on the basis that we're playing Liverpool and we might need a little bit of steel around the place, I would have to go for Kovacic. So my 11, Edison, Walker, Stones, Diaz, Aki, Rodri, Kovacic, KDB, Bernardo, Foden and Haaland. So I don't have any differences to that, mate. Or do you agree with my little arguments there I've come up with?
No, I think you're spot on, and you do need a little bit of extra heft in midfield, and Kovacic is the man who's best placed to provide it. I don't think Nunez, because, well, first of all, I don't think he can play on the wing very effectively. So, you know, it could be him instead of Kovacic on, but with Pep, you never know. So that might be perhaps maybe a head scratcher that he might throw our way. Yeah. But no, I totally agree with you. I don't think there's much argument that anyone can come up with against that particular 11. But he'll obviously be relying on the services of impact subs in the second half. Now, here's where you stick your neck on the line, Bernard. let's put you in a scenario where you've got to put your life savings on a result here. Tell me that you're going to go for something different than 1-1.
Well, let's go. I mean, I'll start with Andy Morrison's prediction because that's positive. He's saying 2-0 for City, Andy Morrison. So he's quite confident. He did this a week or two ago, so he's not been scared off by Liverpool.
Go on, Andy. Go on.
Recent things. But I cannot get away from history, mate. I'm sorry. I just can't believe. I want us to win. I'm so desperate us to go there and win. But I'm just going to please Arsenal fans. I'm going for 2-2.
All right. Well, I'm going to go a tiny bit more.
I'm going for 2-2, but we'll still win the league. Because Liverpool will drop more points than we will for the rest of the season. But
yeah, I'm sort of going for a 2-1 win for City. Yeah. And the way I'd like to see it play out is like a 94th minute winner.
Yeah.
And that would just, you know, suit us right down to the ground.
We really had to come into this game, I thought, top of the table. I think it would have took a bit more pressure off us. At the moment, we're both looking over our shoulders, of course, at Arsenal, who will be above us if they win against Brentford on Saturday, of course. So, you know, they'll have a big say now. We were sort of writing them off a few weeks ago, weren't we? And I think on your channel and various things, we were sort of saying Arsenal didn't have the nous to do it. But again, momentum, if Arsenal can get top and then we draw and stay top, of course, and then obviously all on the same games played. It's 10 games left. We're not all going to win those 10 games. I'd love to say City going to win 10, go on a run and win 10 in a row. But I just don't think we've got that City at the moment that we've perhaps had over the last few seasons. So I'm going 2-2. I'm obviously would love a win. I want a win. I'm desperate for a win. I'm hoping for a 2-2. If we get beat, all right, we're 4 points behind Liverpool, 5 points behind Arsenal or so then. I won't write it off, but of course, then you've got the big pressure of the next league game, I think, is Arsenal, isn't it? So
it is indeed.
Yeah, we've got to get at least a draw out of this, in my mind, just for our own psychological effects on Liverpool and Arsenal. Mm-hmm. I think it's important we get at least a result. I want a win, but I'll sort of be happy with 2-2, which means it's out of our hands again, because Arsenal and Liverpool can then win the title if they win all their games and we can't do a thing about it. So I don't like that, but I'd take it. I'd take it now. If you offered it now, I would probably just take the draw, but offer it me when we score that 95th minute winner and I'll be happy then.
Okay. Well, fantastic, guys. I think that'll do for us. Obviously, I've taken my time getting this pod out, but we're going to edit it straight after this and get it out to you, and you'll have a good day and a half to digest the thoughts of your two mates here at Bolt from the Blue. So we'll leave it there and finish off in the normal way, guys, by saying, have one on us and up the Blues.
Up the Super Blues.